The musical adaptation of Alice Walker's Pulitzer Prize-winning novel, The Color Purple, is kicking off its national tour right here in Chicago. Although the bodacious singer Suge Avery says that Miss Seeley show is ugly, the audience can appreciate the beauty in Seeley's triumph over adversity. After experiencing trauma after trauma in the first act, we see Seeley come of age and not only become her own woman, this Seeley gets a lot more woman-on-woman action than Whoopi Goldberg ever did.
Hey!
Would Miss Seeley have been a fan of RuPaul's Drag Race?
Plus, anti-vaxxer Jenny McCarthy thinks there's a ghost in her living room.
The use of the slur word faggot is down by 90% in the past 4 years on Twitter.
And a new study says at 25, the kids are all right. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. Hey, Mark.
Hey, what?
Hey, mister, you've been on my mind. Hey, mister, we're two of a kind. So, Mark Fillion, I'm keeping my eyes on you.
Ooh.
You betcha think you don't nothing but singing the blues. Oh, mister, have I got the news for you? I'm something, and I hope that you'll think you're something too.
Aww.
Isn't that a sweet, beautiful song?
That is a sweet, beautiful song.
That is Suge Avery in the film adaptation of The Color Purple.
Not the musical.
Not the musical, seducing Whoopi Goldberg, Miss Seeley, who later on have a very romantic affair together.
They do, but not so much in the movie, right? I feel like in the movie it's kind of very much glossed over, right?
Yeah, it was definitely very much the meat of the book. And when Alice Walker's Pulitzer Prize-winning novel, The Color Purple, hit theaters in 1985, much like the TV series Roots, it caused a sensation with its brutal and frank portrayal and beautiful portrayal of life for African-American women in the South in the 1930s.
Mm.
Now, Alice Walker had her reservations with Steven Spielberg, who at the time was known for E.T. and Close Encounters of the whatever kind.
Third kind?
Fifth, seventh.
The sexy kind.
The sexy kind.
I saw that porno, right?
Schindler's List came out in 1993, years later. But
right.
It was just such a juggernaut because the book was this huge hit. Mm. It won the Pulitzer Prize. They turned it into this movie. It was a commercial success. It was a critical success. It was nominated for 11 Academy Award nominations and gave Whoopi Goldberg her Academy Award.
Amazing. You know, and it was an amazing movie. I saw it when it came out. You know, the thing is, like, you got some kind of weird sense that there was that romantic tension between Whoopi Goldberg's character Seeley and Suge Avery, because they do kiss, but you don't really see it as I didn't really maybe at the time didn't see it because I was young as lesbianic.
Oh no, we were. You know? I was in the movie theater and I turned to my friend Adam Small, who's real cute.
And you were a young kid when you saw The Color Purple, right?
I was really young.
I mean, what were you, like 11 or 12?
Yeah,
why would
an
11 or 12 year old go see The Color Purple?
Because we had seen all the other movies.
Okay.
And we were like, me and my friend Adam, we went to the movie theaters and we were like, oh, I guess this is playing. So we went and sat down in the row. And I was just like, when Suge Avery gives a kiss to Whoopi Goldberg and she smiles, I got tingly.
Ooh.
And
she wanted to kiss Adam.
I wanted to kiss Adam. And so
he said, now it's your turn, bitch.
And then Adam says to me, it's like, hey, Fausto, look in the front row.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? And he's like, there are two people having sex on the floor of the theater. So that movie got people very horny. Sister, you're on my mind. And so, you know, Quincy Jones, I guess there was a scandal about it because he got all the credit for writing all the music, but I guess there was a bunch of other musicians that contributed to the film.
Oh.
But it was one of the first times Steven Spielberg stopped working with John Williams and departed from his partnership with John Williams.
Because he wanted a black person to do it, right?
Well, he wanted somebody who was appropriate for this film. And I mean, I have to say, I love John Williams' film, but I think probably 90% of Quincy Jones's music speaks to my mind and my heart. Mm. I'm a huge fan, of course, of We Are the World, We Are
the Children. And the Sanford and Sons theme song.
And the He's also just a really accomplished jazz musician, yeah. And just an extraordinary, like, so many good songs. And,
and at this point in time, he gives no fucks.
And he gives up, like me.
Yeah.
He tells the truth. He's like, he said Richard Pryor was so high he didn't care who the fuck he was having sex with. And that he probably had sex with Marlon Brando.
Yeah, I think he said, like, no, they did.
And I'm like, that I buy that. Mm-hmm. I agree
if
with
Quincy
that.
Quincy Jones tells you that, you know it's true.
Quincy Jones does not give a fuck. Yeah. Chaka Khan was supposed to be cast for Shug Avery's. It was later given to actress Margaret Avery, who in the film famously goes and says, Miss Seeley, you show is ugly. And well, for years, drag queens and gay men quoted that famous, notorious line.
Well, you know, it was kind of like Seeley's fate in life. It was like, maybe, you know, I don't know if you saw her in real life, like, would you think she was ugly or she was just made to feel ugly?
She was made to feel ugly.
She was molested by her, you know, her father. She was basically sold to this man. Mm-hmm. Who abused her and kept her separated from her sister. You know, just one terrible thing after another.
Whoopi Goldberg begged Alice Walker to let her audition for the film because she was a big fan of the book.
Oh, really?
And when she, we know, because I guess, like, I remember when Tu Wong Fu was being made into a film that Steven Spielberg was involved with that, and everybody knew that movie was being made. My mother called me up on the phone. She says, Steven Spielberg is making a movie about drag queens, and you need to audition for it.
You should have.
And I was like,
you could have been up there with Coco Peru and
Lady Bunny.
And Lady Bunny.
Well, in some ways, you know,
Petal Lettuce.
You know, the world has a way of coming around, right? So, Whoopi Goldberg found out that they were going to take Alice Walker's beloved book, you know, and turn it into a film. And so she begged Alice Walker to come see her show, her one woman show on Broadway, off Broadway, I believe. And that was later turned into an HBO special.
Which I saw.
Which was a fantastic.
Which was huge.
And
made Whoopi a star.
Made Whoopi a star. What really made Whoopi a star that she was cast in the lead role as Miss Seeley in the film. Now, she auditioned to be Oprah's role of Sophia because she felt that she was better able to play that. But when she auditioned for Steven Spielberg, guess who was in the room with
him? Alice Walker?
Michael Jackson.
Oh, really?
Come on.
What was he doing in the room?
He was friends with Steven Spielberg, and he loved that book, too. And Whoopi Goldberg performed a improvised comedy skit of E.T. getting arrested for drug possession.
Wow.
Oprah Winfrey, who this is why Oprah can go to the Oscars and walk around and do all this stuff, because she was nominated for that role as Sophia. She was told she didn't think she was going to get the role, and she went to a fat farm to lose weight. And then she got a call from Steven Spielberg and says, stop what you're doing. Do not lose another pound. Uh-huh. Gain all the weight back. And if you're any skinnier, you're not going to get the role of Sophia.
Wow. Wow. I noticed that she had tried out for the role. And at that point in time, she hadn't launched her TV show nationwide yet or hadn't syndicated. She just had whatever it was, like Windy City Live or whatever it was, Windy City AM, Chicago AM. She was doing that. And there was some negotiation with her salary or some kind of billing, and she wanted more of a billing. And she said, but, you know, I'm going to have this show that's going to be syndicated everywhere coming up soon. And they're like, yeah, but it isn't happening now, so forget about it.
Yeah, I'll be on the future season of RuPaul's Drag Race. You better start paying me more money.
Well, and, you know, and then Oprah had, you know, in her final years of the talk show, she had a reunion for everybody.
It was
and
wonderful.
They examined that, and they did the behind the scenes reality TV show about the making of the Oprah Winfrey show, and they did a lot of stuff on the back end of like trying to get all the stars from that. And the big thing was like they couldn't get Danny Glover because he was tied up filming, I believe, in Alaska
in the Expendables or something like that.
I don't remember
Predator
exactly what it was,
like
but
that,
he was doing no, I don't think it was that. But he and so they were like it was going to cost like $100,000 to fly him out just to do it. And she's just like, listen, we can't have a reunion without him. So they spent $100,000 just to bring him out.
Amen, honey. Can I get an amen up in
you
here?
You sure can.
Miss Seeley, you another famous line from the film is, "You told Harpo to beat me." That's Oprah saying.
Well, that. You know, and it's so sad. It's like that kind of that thing. You kind of like, why would you do that? But it's just, you know, she was feeling just so inferior and insecure. And
I think that, you know, from seeing this, the musical adaptation, is it made more sense in the musical. It was like, well, I guess he's going to have to beat you, you know, because Sophia is not going to. Sophia says this line in the book and in the play and in the film: "All my life I've had to fight." Thank you guys so much for indulging me in this. "I've had to fight my daddy. I've had to fight my uncles. I had to fight my brothers. A girl child ain't safe in a family of men, but I've never thought I'd had to fight in my own house. I love Harpo. God knows I do, but I'd kill him dead before I'd let him beat me."
She's like, I'm sorry. You know, the show is like, it's very minimal in the sense that there's really not much of a set. You know, the set is mainly just some chairs that get pulled off a wall and back and forth. And I guess maybe they pare it down maybe because they're going to tour with it.
Originally, the show was very different. When it first premiered in Broadway, it had a very lavish set. But in this revival, they're simplifying things very much. I don't know why it closed 3 years after opening on Broadway. I understood that it had financial problems, but you're reading that otherwise. That,
well, it grossed $103 million by the time it closed. And, you know, shows come to an end sometimes. Yeah. People see it, and that's the market for it. And then it's like, okay, put it on a shelf and bring it back a few years later.
And so we talked to Allie Willis, and she said she was brought in. She's a white Jewish girl from Detroit.
You might know her from such fabulous hits as The Neutron Dance.
Yeah.
Or the theme song to Friends.
Or what is the song? The na-na-na-na, there'll never be this way. That's yeah. I'm trying to remember how that song goes.
Okay.
Allie Willis said she came up with the theme song by taking a pencil and banging the side of a coffee mug.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where she came up with that. The crazy clapping part of that song.
Well, and I guess she does a lot of her stuff because she's not a trained musician, or at least not early on in her career. I'm sure she's had a little bit of training here and there, but she does most of her stuff with rhythm and percussion. She also did the song, you know, September.
Do you remember?
And then, of course, she's probably groaning a little bit that Taylor Swift is covering it, but she also might be like, well, at least it's a paycheck.
Yeah, because when you write those songs, you're making
coin. You're the
one
that makes the money.
Mm-hmm. And Allie Willis has a Museum of Kitsch in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And she was instrumental of putting and creating the Del Rubio triplets. Yeah. And she was very close friends with Paul Rubin in the early days of developing his one-man show, the Pee-wee's, into the film, Pee-wee's Big Adventure, and had a falling out with him. Yeah. She did not want to talk about it.
She would not want to. I think we even asked her about it, and she didn't want to talk about it. So if you are a Plus subscriber, I recommend you go back into the archives and listen to that show. It's Allie, A-L-L-E-E, and then Willis, W-I-L-L-I-S. And check it out. That's only available for Plus subscribers. We talked to her when we were down in Austin, Texas, for a South by Southwest convention, and she was just absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, one of my, I would say, top 10 favorite interviews of all time.
For sure.
So, The Color Purple, we saw it. It's making its revival here in Chicago. It's very bare bones. The set is just a bunch of chairs, and most of the props are a bunch of chairs, and the actors only have a major costume
change.
The
actors are not chairs.
Yeah. And all those chairs are singing. And, you know, I would definitely say that, you know, actress Carrie Compera, who plays Sophia, is sort of like a drag queen being made to look like Oprah Winfrey. Mm-hmm. And when she comes out onto the stage, we feel like this is Oprah at her best. Like, she can sing the house down. Mm-hmm. She's a formidable actress. Mm-hmm. Probably steals the show and does this athletic dance number.
She's got moves.
With Jay Daughtry, who plays Harpo. who I don't, in the second act, I'm like, this man is strong. Because mm-hmm. Carrie is thick.
He's either strong or she's padded.
I'm thinking a little bit of both.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no way. He was moving her around like she weighed 2 pounds.
You know, and the first act is filled with such tragedy. It's trauma after trauma after trauma. All these
depressing.
People go through it, and then you're just like, oh my God. But then the second half, it lightens up a little bit. It's funnier, and then there's a lot of resolution to a lot of these big problems that you see.
What do you think about the Adriana Hicks, who plays Celie in mm-hmm. the revival?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, she's a beautiful woman, so it's like she, you know, but she can act ugly. You know what I mean? She acts like a little bit mousy in the beginning, but she still has a little bit of spitfire inside of her, you know? Literally.
Well, it's really hard for these really good-looking actors to look ugly, to look, you know, wretched.
Yeah.
And somehow they manage to do it. And I'm just sitting there watching this, and a lot of it is the lighting, a lot of it is the makeup, a lot of it is their body language. And she, you know, Arianna Hicks transforms Celie from this wretched woman who is struggling to keep her head above water into this strong, dynamic figure by the end of the musical. So it really, you know, if you want to see some of the finest acting and musical theater, definitely go check it out. Mm-hmm. However, as a fan of Quincy Jones's score for the film, I don't understand why they didn't bring in at least Miss Celie's blues, or maybe God is trying to tell you something into this.
It's, you know, contracts, laws, things like, you know, people, things their own. Steven Spielberg's like, over my dead body. Who knows? You know what I mean?
But isn't a musical adaptation, wouldn't it make sense?
Of a book, not the movie.
But I think that's a cop-out. You know, it's like the film was such a juggernaut, and it launched. I mean, they're literally, you know, they're channeling Oprah Winfrey with Carrie's portrayal of Sophia, and certainly Adriana Hicks as Celie is very Whoopi Goldberg. And so, why are we not seeing? Maybe God is trying to tell you something. I would like to encourage.
You're fucked, Fausto. You're just fucked over it. They did it to spite you.
Well, and they're not spiting me, they're spiting themselves, you know. Maybe God is trying to tell you something. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, these are really beloved, powerful songs. We wouldn't have Sister Act if it wasn't for the success of The Color Purple film and Whoopi Goldberg's success with that. Okay.
Why are you asking, what would Miss Celie have been a fan of RuPaul's Drag Race?
Well, this is interesting because our dear good friend, Trixie Mattel, she posted on social media and confessed, and I thought it was a very interesting confession. She says that the vast majority of her audience, her fans, are women with trauma.
White women.
White women with trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about that. I was like, well, maybe it's white women who can afford to go to these meet and greets. You know, they're not cheap.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're paying $100 to meet these queens, and, you know, you have to travel, you have to get the tickets, you know, it's work, you know, and being a drag queen or being a drag fan isn't something that's affordable for everybody. Mm-hmm. So maybe that might be one issue, but I would like to think that, you know, and it sounds like Justin Bieber visiting the Anne Frank Museum or something, but Miss Celie is a fictional character. She didn't really exist.
Who experienced a lot of trauma, and you think drag could have saved her life?
Well, I think in the second half of the musical, certainly, you know, clothing and costume, I don't want to give it away, but it's definitely not part of the Steven Spielberg film. Mm-hmm. And we definitely see a very different side to that narrative where clothing and costume play a great part in the liberation of these women.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
So I would definitely like to think that, you know, modern age, people who are struggling, who are coping with trauma would relate to drag queens or the idea of costume as a form of liberation.
Mm. Well, she, you know, in a lot of ways, Miss Celie's she's a star fucker, right?
Because she's attracted to Suge.
Suge, who's a star, but, you know, Suge's beautiful, she's talented, she's got the moves, and she's just like, I'm gonna tap that.
Why not, baby?
And it saved her life, that's for sure. But if you get a chance to go see it, if it's touring by you, go and check it out.
Yeah, and right now here in Chicago, I think they're doing a 2-for-1 tickets.
This week, I think. So
this week.
If you have the opportunity to do it. But I think it closes at the end of the month here, so get on it.
You know, I want I feel some concerns. There's muddy arrangements, meaning that it's sometimes hard to understand what's being sung or spoken.
Right.
And I think that's part of the sound system in the theater. Mm. I'm guessing that it'll be fixed by the time it tours around the country. And definitely, you know, if you're going there to watch, listen, to get to go to church with Quincy Jones, you're not going to get that.
And I was, you know, I was interested because, you know, I always wondered why they called it The Color Purple. And I don't remember them actually, you know, like in the film, if they said it or if I forgot, it was a while ago. But during the stage production, they say,
I think it pisses God off when you walk by the color purple in a field and don't notice it.
And Suge says that, right?
Suge Avery.
Yeah, yeah.
You show is ugly, Miss Seeley.
And I was like, oh, that's
you
where it comes
show
from.
Is ugly, Miss Seeley. You show is ugly. Mm-hmm. You don't look good, baby. Now give me a kiss.
And so when I heard that, I just in my mind, I thought of this experience that I had back when I was waiting tables back in the mid 90s. And we're sitting there, we're folding napkins and we're talking. Somebody starts talking about this purple dildo, right? And they keep going on about this purple dildo, whatever. So maybe I had it in my mind. And so later on after work, I'm sitting on the train and I'm kind of like sitting halfways because the person is like my feet are kind of more towards the aisle because somebody's big is sitting next to me, and I look behind me, and this guy, he's reading the newspaper, so I'm kind of looking at what the headlines might be on the newspaper, and I'm looking to see what's there, and then I look down, and I see, oh, wow, that dude's got this purple dildo out, and then I was just like, wait a second, that's not a dildo, it was his dick was the color purple. It was like this bright, because, you know, dicks come in all shapes and colors.
So you think, you like, know, the color purple has a sexual connotation to it?
You know, this guy was African-American. He was a black dude. And I have seen, you know, some guys that are black and their dicks can be more purplish. You know, I've seen bright pink dicks. I've seen gray dicks. I've seen brown dicks. I've seen, you know, flesh color dicks. But this was definitely, it was a purple dick.
Yeah, you're like the rainbow, United Colors of Benetton.
Listen,
when it comes to dicks.
There's no wrong color for a dick.
You know, all colors are beautiful.
I've seen albino dicks.
Oh, what is an albino dick?
Well, you know, it's like that vitiligo. People like this. That's actually can be very common on some.
It's like
guys.
A calico cat.
Yeah, it's like they have little white spots on their dick.
I think vitiligo is adorable. And I know that's like, you know, it's traumatizing when you, as somebody with a giant scar on my shoulder, it's like taking my shirt off, everyone's like staring at it like,
oh, it's no big deal.
And they're like, what the hell is that? You know? And you're like, oh my God, please stop asking me questions about, you know. And somebody with an unusual name, it's like all day long people go, Fausto? What's Fausto? What the hell is that? You know? So imagine somebody with a vitiligo all day long answering the question.
Yeah.
Did you get burned there? Oh my God. Ugh, you know?
And especially if you have it in your dick, people are, is that a venereal disease?
Yeah.
Or an STI, I think we call them. No, we don't call them venereal diseases anymore, do we? No.
Sexually transmitted infection.
There we go.
Because we're trying to depathologize things. Mm-hmm. How are lesbian families doing, speaking of color purple?
The kids are all right.
The kids are all right.
At 25, they started the study 25 years ago. It's the National Longitudinal Lesbian Family Study. At the time, I guess gay guys weren't involved or having kids as much. Uh-huh. And so they followed these kids in the late 80s and early 90s. And now they're about 25 years old. And you know what? The kids are all right. They're doing just fine, just as much as the straight counterpart families. But what's interesting, though, is like recently they also had the world's largest study of same-sex families, and that was done in Australia. And they found that kids raised by same-sex couples were actually happier and healthier than kids that were from like straight families. And it didn't matter like the level of education or their household income. They were just happy. And I could kind of see that because it's like, you know, once you come into terms with being gay or queer, is like you're probably going to impart that kind of sensibility into your own kids and being like, be what you want to be, do what you want to do. And that's where a lot of people find happiness and being able to pursue that kind of thing. So if they're encouraged in that sense, I think kids will be much better rather than like, you know, when your parents are straight and you're gay and they're trying to get you to do this or do that. It can be confounding.
Well, as Florence and the Machine say in Shake It Out, it is always darkest before the dawn. And Americans are right now holding their breath because the Republican Party and the president are just like, Trump, Russia, have at it. This country is yours for the taking. And we're just going, what is going to happen? Where are we going to go from this? It is always darkest before the dawn. And it's easy
to... This is what Susan Sarandon wanted, right?
Well, she said she did. She said, she's like,
sometimes
fuck
you
it
have
up.
To break it apart to get it. Now, I'm not endorsing that. I would have much rather not lived through this bullshit.
We will spend most of our life patching up this
garbage
4 years, hopefully. And if we don't get our shit together, we're going to get 8 years and maybe indefinite years of Trump. And this might be the end of the United States. You know, it might be, it's okay for the United States to come to an end. All good things come to an end. And maybe, you know, that we were not effective enough at organizing ourselves against Trump. But you know what? I don't think so. I think we're going to overcome this.
I think so too.
I think we need to remember that change is still happening, that there are still good people out there, that we are the majority, that we are. Who's in charge? You, the kind, compassionate, diverse Americans. A diversity embracing Americans are in charge. We have just been have a temporary setback. And here's an interesting study right now. There's a site called nohomophobes.com that studies the use of slur words on the internet. And over the past 4 years, the term faggot is down by 90% in use on Twitter.
Although it did have a little spike recently. So
that's all
what's going on there. But I'm looking at this graph here and it's amazing when you see like from 2014 or 2013, like how often people use the word faggot all the time. And now it's just like, it's gone. It went down to like next to nothing in the 2017. And then it just recently had a little bit of a spike, but it's really much lower. And then the term no homo has really gone down a lot too, and so gay, because remember they even had a
that's so gay,
they used to have a PSA with people like Wanda Sykes being like, don't say that's so gay. If you mean to say that like it's terrible, say it's terrible, but equating gay with being terrible is, you know, is terrible.
I think maybe the term cuckolding or cucks has taken over, you know, the right wing, or you know, and maybe they're using the word faggot to actually describe gay people, and the majority of the time they're not using it to describe each other. So it may just be that, you know, certain words fall out of fashion. And, you know, certainly other pejorative words that people, we've had a huge debate over what words transgender people allow other people to use and not use. And, you know, certainly
or what they like to be called.
Or like to be called and what's respectful and so on.
We're not word police here. We're just, you know, just you can use any word you want, but expect repercussions.
And I've said this before. If you want people to stop using a word, give them an alternative word.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah.
Because hate, the words are not going to replace the hate. The sentiments is still there. It's all about challenging people's masculinity, about who can be what, and what is a real person, what is, you know, what is, how does dehumanizing a person by calling to question their gender identity and ability to express it.
There seems to be a little a spike in the word dyke, though. Like between 2014 and 2017 or beginning of 2018, they didn't use it too much, but I'm seeing some of these spikes in the word dyke. And I wonder if it's because, you know, we're talking so much about feminism now and TERFs and all that kind of stuff.
Maybe.
Or maybe it's, you know, lesbians themselves using it, being like, dyke power. Because, you know, for a lot of people, dyke can be an insult, but I know a lot of women that use dyke because that's who they are.
Well, we've been doing this podcast for 14 years. We are not a media conglomerate. That is why you hear us talking about media conglomerates on the show. That's how you know independent. That's exactly how you define a media independent media. Do they talk about media companies merging or not? If they don't, they're part of a media conglomerate. And so as wonderful and as awesome, a lot of these progressive videos that are being made and posted on Facebook, ultimately, they're not going to be talking about organizing ourselves politically to defeat Trump. They're not going to be talking about how these large media companies are giving lots and lots of money to Republicans to make sure, one, that we remove net neutrality forever, and that these companies can merge with each other. Right now, AT&T
and Time Warner were told, psych!
Sorry,
you can't merge just yet. Mm-hmm. And they're just like,
whoa, I can't wait to take everybody's internet away.
And I would love to see, you know, MTV's Decoded or MeToo or some of these other channels sort of address media conglomerates, mm-hmm. and how they impact Latinx, people of color, and how these media conglomerates really ultimately get us fighting amongst mm-hmm. each other mm-hmm. and not uniting and organizing ourselves politically.
Because you've been thinking about all these videos a lot. It's Francesca, and who's the other one you kind of...
There's a few of them. You instantly recognize them. Yeah. You're like, you see these videos and you go, holy cow, the production value is great. The writing is hilarious. Mm-hmm. This host is like... young and charismatic
and of color,
and they just come out of nowhere, you know, and I'm like going, wow, this is great, but
there's something behind it.
It just feels like I'm ordered a glass of lemonade and all I got was the ice cubes. It's cool and refreshing, but I'm still thirsty. and so I start digging and I go, well, who's paying for all this? Because this stuff costs money. You know, Feast of Fun is made possible because of financial support of people like you. And if you're listening to the show and you're not a premium subscriber, you can ensure that one day we won't be around mm-hmm. and you'll be listening to some astroturfing Russian robot. But we're still here because you, the listener, made a difference. You can go to feastoffun.com/plus and become a member, or you can make a one-time donation. We know that you guys buy cocktails. Buy us a drink at feastoffun.com/donate. Mm. And so I go and dig around and I find who is funding some of these things. And it's Viacom. It's Verizon. Verizon is spending millions.
Condé Nast.
Spending millions of dollars to control what we think and what we have to say mm-hmm. about culture and politics. Mm-hmm. But most importantly, the one thing that they're really, really good at is getting us to fight with each other. Mm-hmm. And so we're not talking about how white gay men are inspired by the stories of women of color. They're talking about how white gay men fail women of color. Mm-hmm. And not what we share in common, but how unlike we are, and therefore we shouldn't be listening to each other mm-hmm. or hanging out with each other or uniting together. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a mistake. And I think it's time to be questioning those mm-hmm. things. And I do feel like when I bring this up mm-hmm. to people who are fans of this stuff, it's like me telling a child Santa Claus doesn't exist.
Right. Well, it's because, you know, we get caught up in those kinds of messages. We want to, because we don't want to be racist. We don't want to be misogynistic. We don't want to be transphobic. We want to give people the appropriate recognition for the things they do. That's who we are. But these kinds of videos make it seem as though that's like most of us are not that way. They're in many ways they're dividing us. They're trying to pit us against each other. And like Mr. Rogers says, when you see a video like this and it's like these trouble, also look for the people that are helping. There's people that are trying to make those kinds of things better.
And so this is my idea that I'm just throwing out there into the universe. I want to do like you know how people brag about how many people they have following them on social mm-hmm. media? I want everybody to register one person they know to vote. Just get one person to vote.
Especially millennials.
Get your young friends to vote. Show them how to go register for vote and brag about it. Post about it on social media. Instead of, I don't care how many people follow you on Twitter or Instagram, especially those drag queens, you know, who are on Drag Race and they're like, they have their fans. I want to challenge them to get their young fans who are 18 or over to register to vote. Mm-hmm. In November, we need to get every single person voting to take back our country. If not, you know, better start learning Russian.
I don't want to learn Russian. I'm already learning Norwegian.
No.
One language at a time. One difficult language at a time.
You know, the FDA, this is the thing that kind of gets my goat. I'm a big fan of creams, milks, lotions, butters, mm-hmm. all kinds.
Yummy.
From plant to animal. Mm-hmm. And the FDA right now has issued a statement that they're They've soured on non-dairy milk alternative products that use the term milk in their marketing and labeling. So, you, like, you know, soy or almond or coconut milk products. So, and the FDA commissioner announced Tuesday that the FDA will soon issue new guidances on the use of the term. And he added, products that aren't abiding by the FDA policies. I'm sorry. He's adding, so he's saying that soy milk or almond milk, for example, mm-hmm. is going to stop having call itself
milk.
Milk. So I made a recommendation. We should call it nut juice.
Mm. Nut juice.
I don't know if that's going to work out.
Mm.
If you think about it, the piña colada is made from what? Cream of coconut.
Mm.
And what do you put on your skin? Cocoa butter. It ain't going to happen. I don't know what's going on. But basically, like, you know, here the FDA could be going off for so many things, food safety-wise, and they're just concerned about the milk lobby and keeping the word milk off of soy and almond milk products, even though it's very clear
on the packaging. Well, and I wonder, like, how much it really affects, like, dairy farmers, the dairy
production. It doesn't at all.
You know?
But they think it does.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it affects the dairy farmers as they want to have an exclusivity over the term milk.
Mm-hmm. I also feel like they've already been on the market for way too long. I mean, we've had almond milk and coconut milk and all these things and cocoa butter for decades now. They're not ever going to be able to take that away.
They might.
I don't think so.
I mean, man, it's like, did you not see Trump basically, like, licking Putin's dick? That was really interesting because
you're making homophobic remarks.
Caressing him amorously, and I'm not. You know, Does it look gay? Yeah, it does look gay. It looks like somebody who is being. Who usually grandstands, his body language, his volume of his voice is energetic. And when he was next to Putin, he looked so defeated and sad and just kind of at the same time, kind of like a child wanting approval from his father.
Well, he's got Putin's got him by the balls. You know, these Russian oligarchs have so much money. They probably own Trump.
And you guys heard it here first on the show. You know, it's like when we first started interviewing Russian LGBT activists on the show, they were all like warning us, this is coming to your own backyard.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, get out of here. Mm-hmm. That ain't no chance to never happen. And here it is.
Yeah, but I don't know. We had that Alexei, what's his name on?
Yeah.
And he was Russian and he was fighting, like, you know, for gay rights in Russia. But then he said, like, all sorts of weird, like, anti-Semitic stuff, like, after he did our podcast, like a week later or something. And now I don't know what he does. He's, like, living in Switzerland. So part of me is just kind of like, was he
Part of the propaganda
machine. I don't know. You know what I mean? I just don't. What can I trust from that?
Well, I think it sounds like somebody was compromised and told to say anti-Semitic things to discredit himself. Because you know.
Maybe.
I mean, at this point, it's like.
Maybe, but anti-Semitism is very strong in Russia.
Yeah.
You know? So who knows?
We don't really know. But it's certainly like anti-Semitism would not play well in the United States.
No.
And here is a Russian LGBT rights activist courting Americans for help in fighting for LGBT rights in his homeland. And so, you know, logically, somebody who's compassionate, who's understanding, who's educated, why would they then just start spewing anti-Semitic stuff all of a sudden? It's not like he was doing it in the past. He just all
that
of a sudden
knew of.
That we knew of.
Yeah.
He didn't do it on the show.
No.
He had plenty of opportunity.
Yeah.
I mean, we spent a whole day with this guy. He had plenty of opportunity to be like, are those Jews awful people? Ick, ick, ick. You know?
You shouldn't say that because somebody's going to take that out and be like, da, 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 yeah.
You know, well, they could edit a lot of the stuff on the podcast. You know, and so to me, I'm like going, when I heard that, when I saw that, I was like, oh, this guy is like fearing for his life. You know, he's being told to say this stuff because Putin plays a great propaganda game. I mean, he is like the James Bond spy times 100, yeah, a villain. It's unbelievable what he's accomplished. That's why he's like, he had a shit-eating grin. Putin was so happy. He was just like, ha, ha, ha.
And it's just those, a lot of our listeners spend a lot of time on social media. you have to, when you have these people that come up with these disparaging, you know, posts, and these people that can engage you when they're relentless with opposing viewpoints, a lot of times you have to remember these are people sitting in the front of a computer in Moscow being paid money, controlling 10 different accounts and just trying to dissuade you and sway public opinion. It's, you know, social media is a great thing for connecting people, but also too, now we're seeing just how much it is dividing us.
And we share so much to get more together. We're stronger together. We're happier together. Mm-hmm. You know, it's what is the point of living in the United States? This is our diversity. It's all these different people coming together from all around the world to make our workplaces, our communities, our restaurants, our theaters, our languages rich and delicious, like the thick, rich Thai coconut milk, or the shea butter from Africa, or the...
Get yourself some of that stuff. I bought some at the African market. I love it on
my
elbows.
Shea butter is where it's at. It's so good for your skin.
What's going on with anti-vaxxer Jenny McCarthy?
This is somebody who used to be a comedian.
She was?
She's gone off the deep end, you know? So she, I guess she doesn't realize what her Google Home, a smart assistant, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, here, I'll turn on Siri so you guys can hear this. Oh, I'm sorry, this volume's off.
Here, I'll it's do
all it. Good. Hold on. Well, it's supposed to make that sound. I don't know why it's making it. Anyways, so those assistants make a bling bling, you know, sound. And she was like, my piano is haunted. So she took the video camera footage and posted it on the internet to prove that ghosts are real.
Oh, my God.
And everyone was like, you're so stupid, Jenny McCarthy. It's your Google Home Assistant. I love
when
it.
When you wrote that to me, I thought that it was like her personal assistant was playing tricks on her and she fell for it.
No, it's like, you know, Alexa or Google Home or, you know, Apple Home or whatever, you know, it's like it's people like going, you know, they get spooked out by these things. Mm-hmm. Our neighbor has one of those. I don't believe in them.
No,
I'm not a fan of them. No, those smart home assistants.
He likes them. We change music channels and stuff.
I just pick up my phone and say, hey, dummy, play some shit. You know, it's like. It's done. I'm always having my phone nearby me. So I'm like, the thing about screaming across a room at a speaker to me is like, I'm not living in Puerto Rico right now. Hey, Mark, turn on some music. That's the equivalent. I think it's uncouth. It's unrefined. Whereas I can just pick up my smartphone and go, oh, play some Gloria Estefan. Wepa. Wepa, wepa, wepa.
Okay.
I am so excited, Mark.
Yeah, for what?
Three awesome TV shows that I'm going to be watching are coming their way.
What's that?
Well, obviously, you guys know about Cooking with Drag Queens. Mm-hmm. We're still in production, and they are we're putting the finishing touches on these. They're just going to be amazing. If you guys want to make a donation to help with our production costs, go to feastoffun.com/donate. Then, of course, there is Camp Wanakiki, which has a lot of our drag friends and possibly other people you know in it. And that's coming just in weeks to YouTube. And, of course, Norway's number one reality TV show. Alt for Norge.
Aww. I got a chance to reconnect with some of them this past week. I hung out with Kirsten and Kelsey. We did a backyard Bergman. We did a stage reading of a Bergman film called...
Ingrid Bergman.
No.
Astrid Gur Bergman. Gorgon Bergman.
The famous director, Ingmar
Bergman. Ingmar Bergman.
Yes. He did The Magician. So it's a comedy that he did. And so we did the stage reading of that. And I camped it up. And I did that with Kelsey and Kirsten from her theater company, Aquavit Theater, which is a local theater company. And they do contemporary Nordic theater.
But I think, you know, I'm really excited about watching the show, but there's two particular, actually three people that I'm really got my eyes
okay.
on.
Okay.
And because I don't know much about the show because you kept me secret, but Chase is really cute.
Chase is super adorable.
He's the kind of like the college wrestler from, he's from Minnesota?
From Minnesota, yes.
Then there's the tall cabaret artist.
Julie. You can check her out at juliesings.com. If you're in the Seattle area, she has a show coming up, I think the 28th or 29th. But if you check out juliesings.com.
And then there's the young redhead actor who was in the gay Star Trek episode, yes. who doesn't want people to know he was in the gay Star Trek episode.
Well, he's been trying to live it down, but I'm going to try and convince him to come on the podcast soon to talk about that experience, because it's a very important piece of work in the Star Trek world.
And in LGBT history.
Yes.
I'm like, baby, we got to have an intervention. Mm-hmm. You get Brian Sweeney here, and you get to talk to him. Because I think, you know, LGBT people want approval sometimes mm-hmm. of our straight brothers and mm-hmm. sisters.
Yeah.
Are, you know, we want to be... gay folks are like the middle child of mm-hmm. society. Mm-hmm. We want to be loved. We want to be approved. Much more than any other kind of minorities, I would say. Mm-hmm. We really love the applause.
Yes, for sure.
And I welcome him to come and talk about that.
I will reach out to him and do that.
He had the only gay sex scene in Star Trek ever.
Well, it was fan fiction. You have to but remember that,
But it's, you know,
too.
Canon and not canon, though, because right. it was written, the episode was written to air on Next Generation.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It was. So they actually took an existing script.
Mm-hmm.
So that's important.
It. Yes, it's super important. And, he didn't have a good experience filming it. He was also very young at the time. He was but like 21, 22. He wasn't a Star Trek fan, so he didn't really know how important I think this was, mm-hmm. but, we'll get to chat with him about it. And then also too, where I also got to meet with some of the other people from Alt for Norga. I met with Mike, who came down from Minneapolis, and we are going to have a viewing party in Minneapolis. I hope to make it up for that. It's probably going to be at the Swedish Institute.
You will be at the Swedish Institute in Minnesota,
and it's the only castle in Minnesota.
How exciting!
And so I don't know if anybody else. We'll also have a premiere party here in Chicago. We might either do that at the Swedish American Museum, or maybe I'll talk to the guys from Hamburger Mary's, maybe do it upstairs at Mary's Attic. And then I don't know if we'll have one in San Francisco or Seattle where some of the other people live, but that sure would be fun, wouldn't it?
You got to be like the girls from Drag Race and just tour and get these Norwegian mm-hmm. or Swedish museums yeah. to you know, pay for you guys to come.
You know, because I'm going to be featured, I'm pretty well in the first two episodes, I think.
Yeah.
You know.
This is where they tattoo Dracula on your chest, or they make you eat light bulbs.
Mm-hmm. We had to eat some weird stuff, yes.
Did they put your feet in ice water, and you're like, how long can you last?
I did swim...
In water?
I swam in very cold water, yes.
Oh.
Not because I was forced
little
to.
Little did they know that you all had experienced that. Because mm-hmm. you did the Arctic... plunge once.
Well, we did that here in Chicago, but it was so weird because like the water was like not, it was sharp to get in, it was icy, and then it wasn't very deep. I wanted to just kind of plunge, but it was like I would have had to have like, I was just terrible.
Yeah. This was a fundraiser mm-hmm. for animal shelter mm-hmm. that gave us our lovely dog
Jesse.
Ruff, ruff. Yes,
him right there. Ruff, ruff, Jesse ruff. Only barks on command when Fausto plays the don't really? Do it, don't do it.
The harmonica. Really
Get him. It's kind of late for that. For we have neighbors and stuff.
Listen, folks, we live for the applause. Mm-hmm. We Mark and I have to say, and it's been a difficult journey for us. We really, really work hard to make this show happen, and your financial support means the world to us. We rely on it to be able to do this podcast. We wouldn't be doing this show if it mm-hmm. wasn't for your help. Mm-hmm. And I love it when anybody can comment mm-hmm. and share the show. I know it's a little bit of work, but It means a lot to us when you tag us on social media and show us that you're sharing the podcast with your friends that you love.
I know we're your secret little pleasure, but sometimes, you know, secrets die in the dark. So spread the word, spread the love, tell your friends about us.
Show us your love.
Yeah.
Let us know that we're here for you. And make us feel it. Feel. I want to feel your love. I live for the applause. Applause. Applause.
We'll be back next week. I've got Colette Gregory coming back. She's going to talk to us about Hannah Gatsby's Netflix special, Nanette, because she's got a lot of things to say about that.
It's a groundbreaking special. If you haven't seen it yet, go check it out on Netflix.
Especially if you're a performer, if you're an artist, if you're an entertainer, or if you have ideas on what it is to be, you know, a decent human being.
it really, I would say it's probably the most important work of theater I've seen in the past decade.
Oh.
So check it out. It is.
I'm going to have to watch it again now.
It's going to win an awards.
Okay.
It's huge. So definitely check it out. I want to thank you guys so much for listening to the show from the bottom of my heart. I am Fossil Fernos.
I am Mark Fillion.
What's your name? Let us know.
Yeah, let us know.
Bye.
In your Plus membership.
Bye.